Jesus, you're saving the wrong people. Welcome to Right Start with Jim Custer, teaching pastor of Grace Polaris Church in Columbus, Ohio. As we continue our series on the stories Jesus told, we come to some very familiar parables in Luke chapter 15. And here's the context. The religious elite had objected that the Lord was attracting a bad crowd. Surely these tax collectors and other deplorables weren't kingdom material. So Jesus tried to show the scribes and Pharisees where their thinking had gone off track. Here's Pastor Jim.
Luke chapter 15. I'm reading from the New King James Translation. Then Jesus said, "A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me.' So he divided to them his livelihood, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. He would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate. No one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' He arose and came to his father, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. The son said, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here, kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to be merry. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, 'Why, your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf.' But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, 'Lo, these many years I have been serving you. I never transgressed your commandment at any time. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him.' The father said to his son, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" When you turn to the 15th chapter of the book of Luke, Jesus is in a fire fight. A tremendous tension has developed in his ministry. It's interesting that the tension lies not between Jesus and the multitudes, but between Jesus and the religious leaders. In verse 1 and 2, we're introduced to those religious leaders. They are called Pharisees and scribes. A scribe was a professional person whose task was to copy the scriptures and in copying them to become sufficiently acquainted with them to be an authority on scriptural truth. They were the publishers for the religious community of the Jewish people. And when questions of text came up, the scribes were the ones who provided the answers. What does the scripture say? The Pharisees were a religious group who focused upon the scriptures and primarily the first five books of the Old Testament, and they were zealous for the law. They come off with a bad rap in our thinking because of the way they turned against Jesus. But their deepest motivation was good. They were concerned about the Jewish society in which they lived, and they thought the secret was to bring the people back under the obligation of the moral law of God. However, that moral law had been interpreted and expanded profusely. Volumes had been written about how the observant Jew was to live his daily life without violating the law. Every activity had been carefully scrutinized, and the Pharisees were custodians of those customs. They were vigorous in their attempt to be righteous. They were outspoken in their demand that their fellow Jews become strict adherers of these customs. They truly believed that through practicing religious rites, a man, a woman could become valuable to God. And they taught that if we will do these religious things as an attempt to obey the law that God has given in the scriptures, if we will do that, then we will eventually earn God's approval and God's forgiveness. They are really angry with Jesus. They're trying to find ways to discredit him. In chapter 15, they make the observation that the bulk of Jesus' followers were the scum of society. People who had little or no concern about the scriptures and people who were not scrupulous in their choices of how they lived. They're all cataloged under two terms that would have been highly politically correct. Terms to use when you want to describe the bad part of society. Look at it. Verse 2. This man, Jesus, receives sinners and eats with them. That is, Jesus is indiscriminate in his social tastes, in his religious exuberance. Jesus is not careful whom he receives. He not only receives them, but he encourages them by actually eating with them, socializing with them. In verse 1, the sinners are identified as tax collectors and sinners. Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to Jesus to hear him. Now, the tax collectors were traders. They were Jewish people who had sold out to the Roman oppressors And they served the Romans by gathering from the Jewish people the taxes that were levied by the Roman authorities. And many of the tax collectors were unscrupulous. They were the IRS guys. However, they were IRS guys who were working for the enemy. And in addition to working for the enemy, they also would pad the account. So if the Romans said that you owed $2,000 in tax every year, the tax collector would pad that to $2,500 and he would pocket the $500 that the Romans were not expecting. He would gouge his fellow citizens, much like oil companies do from time to time, raising the prices artificially and then pocketing what they had stolen. Now, the bad part of that was that the Roman authorities actually enforced this policy. The Romans really didn't care how much the tax collector kept, as long as the tax collector brought to them the amount that they levied. So you can see how the tax collectors were considered the scum of society. Unscrupulous, liars, cheats, traitors, rebels. The vast majority of the Jewish population thought the tax collector, or the publican, as he is sometimes called, the public official, saw them as being at the bottom of the bottom, beneath the bottom rung of society. And yet these people seemed to be attracted to Jesus. And they came to Jesus to hear what Jesus said. And while the religious people were backing away from Jesus and criticizing him, these tax collectors were coming in droves and listening attentively to what Jesus said. And Jesus seemed to be kowtowing to them. He seemed to be accepting them, receiving them, eating with them. You see, from the standpoint of the scribes and Pharisees, that was a clear indication that something was desperately wrong with Jesus and his teaching, that there was something missing in the moral content of his message, that somehow he was out of step with righteousness and with God, because he was obviously befriending the publicans. Oh, and the sinners? That word means people who were living their lives indiscriminately. They were indifferent to moral codes. They were living their lives like animals. That's the basic idea of that word. Whatever their impulses and desires were, they satisfied them. They were living for the moment. They were secularists. They were not interested in the synagogue. They didn't go to the temple. Sacrifices were not a part of their vocabulary. They were sensual people, living out the passions of their inner desires, the scourge of society. Now, in leveling this accusation, the religious leaders think that they have condemned Jesus by his own success. That is, they couldn't stop these crowds from coming to Jesus, but they could use these crowds as an argument against Jesus. Your popularity, sir, is not based upon any righteous content. It's not that you are teaching the law correctly or bringing people to know God. You're compromising truth in order to be a popularist. And it's obvious, looking at your audience, that you're appealing to the basest instincts of the scum of society. See their argument? Before we press to Jesus' answer, let's ask ourselves, who comes to hear our message? Do the scribes and Pharisees feel very comfortable among us? Or do the sinners and publicans crowd in to hear what we have discovered about God? Jesus answers this accusation by comparing and contrasting in three parables. In the three parables, we first meet two lost objects. In the second parable, we meet two lost sons. In these parables, Jesus is not so much justifying what he's doing, rather he's explaining for us why it works this way. Why were the scribes and Pharisees repulsed by Jesus, and why were the sinners attracted to his message? It's like the scribes and Pharisees were in competition with Jesus, and he was winning the game. More people were listening to him and following his message than were listening to the scribes and Pharisees and following their message. And the scribes and Pharisees argued that we've got the law. We got the scriptures on our side. Obviously, Jesus, you're a compromiser. Look at the crowd that comes to hear you speak. Now notice two things. First of all, notice that Jesus conveys in answer to the Pharisees how God values the tax collectors and the sinners. His first story is about 100 sheep. One of them is lost. What does the shepherd do? Why, he leaves the 99 and goes seeking the one sheep that's lost, and at great cost to himself, he brings back the one sheep that he finds. And what happens? Why, he throws a party. He says to his friends and neighbors, verse 6, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep, which was lost." My sheep. Jesus in his message conveyed to the sinners that they were not scum. They were lost sheep. That following their instincts, they had wandered away and they were in grave danger. But the kindly shepherd who owned them staked his comfort and his health to rescue them. And when he brought them back, he was unembarrassed to say, "This is my sheep. Rejoice with me, I have restored my sheep." Jesus knew that deep in the heart of every sinner and every publican, there's a sense that they belong. There's a longing to be part of things that really matter, to have significance, to have satisfaction. The heart of every sinner aches because instinctively they sense that something's missing. They have wandered away from the other 99. The message that Jesus gave was, there is more joy in heaven over the one who is brought back than the 99 who don't think they have the capacity to wander. And Jesus tells a second story. In the second one, there's a piece of money that's lost. Verse 8, a woman loses one of a set of 10. And she does all kinds of things. She lights a lamp, she sweeps the house, she seeks diligently until she finds it, and when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together, saying, "Rejoice with me, I have found the peace which I lost." Again, one item out of nine breaks the set. The set is not as valuable when one piece is missing. Some years ago, Tricene and I returned from a trip. We were pulling in the driveway of our home. And for some reason, she was taking her rings off, and one of her rings, a diamond ring, slipped out of her fingers and fell. We searched that car, tore it apart. We've never found that diamond ring. She still talks about it. Because the diamond ring was a gift from me. And she doesn't get that many gifts from me. So it had special significance. Now the car is sold, gone. No way that we humanly will ever find that ring again. And yet it comes up in conversation. Why? Because she values it. You see, that ring plus the rest of her rings with her diamond made a perfect set. And now every time she looks at her diamond, she's reminded that a part of that set is not there. It's lost. And inside her, there's still something of an ache, a longing to have the set complete. Now, what's Jesus saying by this? He is saying that God values every one of his children. He's saying that some of his children, even if they're considered a minority, are lost to him. And they're valuable to him. And he wants them back. And in order to retrieve them, he goes to great diligence. He focuses. He intentionally scrutinizes. He searches for them, and he's not content until they are back in the set. And when they're back in the set, he calls his friends and neighbors in, and they have a party. Likewise, I say to you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner. Note that. Over one sinner. Jesus is saying to the people who listen to him, you matter. You matter to God. God places value upon you.
Something doesn't lose its value when it's lost. It's just missing. It can be found again. And the healthy reaction to finding something of value is joy. Those are some good points from Jesus' parables in Luke 15. And we haven't even gotten to the meat of Jim's message, the unforgivable father. We'll hear the conclusion tomorrow. You can own the sermon on CD for a gift of $7 or more. It's part of our series called Stories Jesus Told, Volume 1. And for a gift of $42 or more, you can get the whole set of 12 CDs. I'll tell you where to call or write in a second. Let me just mention that today's edition of Right Start was made possible by listeners like you. Larger gifts, smaller gifts, we see each one as a heartfelt response to God's goodness. If you'd be open to praying and supporting us financially, we'd love to welcome you to the team. You can mail us at Right Start, P.O. Box 437, Worthington, Ohio, 43085, USA, or just call 1-800-984-2313. That's 800-984-2313. And check out the website, rightstartradio.org. Several hundreds of Pastor Jim's messages are available there. I lost count. Pretend to be shocked. You can listen to past radio shows there, and more people are enjoying Right Start as a podcast on iTunes. Check that out, as well as a way to donate securely. All on the website, rightstartradio.org, rightstartradio.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Dan Pope. We call it the prodigal son, but the parable can also be examined through the eyes of the older brother or the dad in the story. Please join us tomorrow for Friday's Right Start. Thank you.